This is the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Williams and Pete Zimmerman here. We'll continue to do the regular show, too, or whatever you call that thing we do when we're not doing this, all the way until 2. So here until 1 to 2, back with yours truly, including the replay of Speed Jokes. Elise Glink joins us on Mondays, the owner of Think Glink Media and Best Money Moves. She's also the co-host of This Week in Wealth, and she also has a newsletter she drops these days. Hey, Elise, how are you?
Hey, John. I'm doing fine, thank you.
What's the title of that fancy new newsletter of yours?
Love, Money, and Real Estate.
So how is that different than what you normally do? What's the vibe there?
Well, what I try to do is highlight some of the relationship issues that people are having with family members or friends when it comes to real estate and money. As you know, it's one of those little touchy things that's sometimes hard to talk about.
Give me an example.
Well, for example, we had a very popular column come out of this for the newsletter about a woman who was having trouble with her son. The son wanted her to give him the farm. And she was struggling with that because she was worried he was going to lose it because he wasn't so great at managing his money.
I think another interesting observation, okay, for me is, maybe you won't find this interesting, but as you, Brenda and I have been married for a while. We've lived in some smaller houses and some bigger houses. We lived in a condo, now we live in a house. It's difficult to know what the expectations are from each of you when you're getting married or as your relationship is evolving about what the other person is going to want in a home someday. You know what I mean? Big
yeah.
or small. And are we going to spend money here or are we going to spend money there? And you want to do it this way and I want to do it that way. And I don't know how you anticipate that, but it's something that you do have to manage as your relationship grows.
Yeah, if you want the relationship to last, and most people do, there are some things that you might want to talk about. And some of that I talk about in this newsletter as well. But it's interesting. People who are just getting married, the hardest thing that they have to talk about is money. What their credit scores are, if they've got any debt. So many people, young people today, are getting married in their early 30s, and they're bringing tremendous amounts of debt into the relationship. And they sometimes try to hide that from each other, and it just causes all kinds of problems when you go to buy a house or you decide to buy a condo, and you can't qualify because somebody either has terrible credit because they've missed payments, and the other person has a huge amount of debt.
And I won't say that my wife and I disagree on this, because we don't. That is, I tend to agree with Brenda's suggestions.
Happy wife, happy life.
It's not even that, though. I mean, I think it's, in our case, it's a correct wife. I mean, Brenda has good taste, and I don't notice or care as much as she does. She's invested in it, and I'm not. But I think it would be interesting in the sort of pre-Cana classes if they said, okay, Robin Blue or accessible gray, which color do you like? Or, you know, three bedroom or two bedroom, big kitchen or you know, open floor plan or a bunch of segmented rooms, just those sorts of things. It would be interesting to know what your expectations are down the road, you know.
Well, and that changes too. So
yeah,
you think
absolutely.
About a long relationship, a marriage of, you know, 20 or 30 years, or a partnership of 20 or 30 years. I'm not the same person I was when I started, you know, my marriage with Sam all those years ago. And I'd argue he isn't the same either. Both of us have raised kids and now working from home. And it's just interesting to see how your needs and expectations change and what that does over time. And I think it's impossible to ask somebody in their 20s or early 30s
yeah.
what they're going to think about the world in their 50s or 60s. It's very hard to imagine.
It would have been rather clever if, when we had that little questionnaire, lo, those many years ago, if they said, okay, say there's a pandemic. Just bear with us.
Wait.
Okay.
Right. You know, and how would that be? It's a little bit like that old economist joke. You know, you're on a desert island. Imagine you had a can opener.
Let's do this. You said that the average asking rent, you've got a listing here of the average asking rents and the median monthly mortgage payments. We have them for Chicago, so let's pick it up there in a minute with Elise Glink. It's 12:15 on WGN. You can sign up for that newsletter, by the way, at glink.substack. thinkglink.com or just link to it at thinkglink.com. This just in, Elise Glink, the Federal Reserve, that's Jerome Powell, just said inflation is too high. The Fed will use all tools necessary to bring it down. Stocks are responding by dropping again, and experts are saying we're in a bear market.
Yeah, it's not that much fun. It's more fun when I get to come on the air and tell everybody, oh, interest, you know, everything's going up and interest rates are coming down. But the reverse is true right now. We saw in mortgage interest rates top 4% for the first time in a long time. They're almost at 4.2%. And that's a reflection of what's going on, or I should say the stock market is a reflection of what's going on with bonds and with what's going on with oil and Russia. That China plane collapsing didn't help, crashing this morning didn't help either. So if you are thinking about your 401k and your retirement plans, unless it's imminent, I would take a step back, turn off the screen, and go worry about something else for a little while. This is just going to take some time to work out.
Let's talk about the average rent and mortgage prices in Chicago. What are the numbers?
Yeah, that's really interesting to see. So nationally, Redfin reported that asking rents, which is the amount that landlords advertise, is up 15% nationally. The good news is in Chicago, it's only up about 4.5%. Right? It makes it one of the reasons that Chicago is one of the more affordable large cities to move to right now is that you can get a lot for your money and the rents are not going up as fast. If you lived in Austin, Texas right now, you'd probably have to move. Rents are up a staggering 40% year over year. And they've only declined in two places nationwide. Milwaukee down 2.5%, Kansas City down 1.5%.
So the cost of the average asking rent in Chicago is $2,262. $2,262. So I'm trying to think of what that gets you. I guess it depends on where you are in the city, but that sounds like a lot to me for rent.
You know, it's interesting. In River North, $2,200 will get you a one bedroom these days in a newer building with a lot of amenities, or even less in one of the, you know, new fancy buildings that are going up down there. In some of the other areas of the city, that'll get you, you'll still be able to rent a house, particularly in the south southwest suburbs. It's still cheaper to own a house right now in Chicago, and the median monthly mortgage is a whole lot less for a similar sized property to the rents. So that's good news in Chicago. That's not the case elsewhere.
So the rent is $2,262. The median monthly mortgage in Chicago is $1,299. That's almost
$1,300.
$1,300 from $2,300. It's $1,000 less a month.
Yeah, it's crazy. People in Chicago, sadly, if you're a homeowner and you're watching home prices skyrocket across the country, we have experienced some appreciation, but nowhere near as much as so many other markets have. That's the oh boy, too bad story. But the good news is that if you want to buy in Chicago, there are a lot of places that are still really affordable. And there are a lot of people moving here who are, you know, attracted by the wonderful job opportunities that we have. Great city. And of course, fabulous February and March weather.
Yes. On a scale of 1 to 10, how important is home ownership for your own personal success? This is a survey done by, I'm not sure who did this. Can you talk about it?
Yeah, this is done by Apartment List. So they're a company that collects data for rentals and apartments. And we, you know, we look at a lot of their information. A lot of it's really good. They wanted to look by generation. Who is, you know, still buying and how important is it to you? And so the silent generation is sort of people who were born up till when World War II started. Then the baby boomers come in, and then it's Gen X, millennials, and of course Gen Z, otherwise known as Zoomers, apparently. And it's interesting, you know, for the silent generation and baby boomers, Gen X, all of them, home ownership is super important. 40 to 45% of them all say it's extremely important or very important, you know, to them, how they feel about themselves personally. Millennials, about a third of millennials say that homeownership is important, and just 23% of Gen Z is saying that it's important. And that makes sense, right? They're just new to the workforce. Gen Z is just getting out there right now. And they're finding a very tough market for renting, as we just discussed, and for buying.
Do you think, though, that those numbers would have been higher 10, 20, 30 years ago? It does seem like the younger people, millennials and Gen Zers, say, and maybe even some Gen Xers, it's more about the experience than the material goods. It's more about travel than having a big house. I know there's exception to those rules, but that's what we've been told. So I wonder if these numbers also reflect where we are as a culture right now, too.
Sure. This is really about post-pandemic versus, you know, what was going on before. And I think that everything has really shifted in the world. I think there's also some concern over this war and whether the war in, you know, in Ukraine, Russia's, you know, moving in on Ukraine and basically trying to take it over, whether that's going to escalate into, you know, we're hearing scary things like World War III. I think that for young people who are just getting into the market and they're just starting to think about their lives, Gen Z's got to have a whole lot of years to go before they reach the average age of homeownership. So right now, the average age for any major metropolitan area across the country, it's about 34 for buying your first house. If you're 22, 23, 24, you've got a huge amount of student loan debt. You're just getting your first job. You're coming out of this pandemic. You're worried about what it's going to feel like working next to people as opposed to buying your house, I think. So we'll see. I think that we'll see it shift. I would like to see the millennial number go up, though, because to me, 34% of millennials think owning a home is important. That's a troubling number. I'd like to see that number more in the 40% range.
Why does that trouble you?
Well, because millennials now, the oldest millennials are, I think, 41 or 42. And the youngest millennials are probably about 27, 28. And, you know, when you're in that span, you know, you've already got kids, you're oftentimes partnered up, you're making, you know, you're settling down roots. And typically, homeownership goes along with that. And if we're not going to see those two things go together, where you're setting down roots, having kids, buying a house, I think it's going to have some other kinds of ramifications for how neighborhoods grow and change.
Oh, yeah.
And even politically.
Well, yeah, that's an interesting way to think about that. I was just thinking in terms of equity. If you're a renter, you aren't building equity. This may be
yes.
a question for my friend David Hochberg, because he can be a little creative about these numbers. But I think a lot of us think that part of our total equity, our retirement plans, our worth is tied into our mortgage, our real estate.
You're absolutely right. Largest percentage of net worth in America has to do with your home and your home equity. Paying off that home before retirement is absolutely key to having enough cash flow to get through. I would also point out that the younger you are when you buy a house, the wealthier you'll be later in life. And so getting people focused on making that those payments and committing to it is important.
That's Elise Glink. Visit thinkglink.com for money and real estate advice and interesting reading on her Love, Money, and Real Estate newsletter. And you can link to that at thinkglink.com. Thanks, Elise.
Hey, you bet, John.
Oh, and then also catch her Sunday mornings at 6:30 with Tom Fortino. And I've got a few things to say about Maury Povich. Maybe you will as well. Jim Dahlke, do you have anything to say about Maury Povich?
What an icon. Icon of daytime television.
Yes. Well, how diplomatic of you, sir. I'm not sure if when we look back at civilization, which may happen next week, if we're going to look at the likes of Maury Povich and go, what the hell? That was us. Or you are the worst person ever. I'm not sure where on that fence I'm going to fall. Let's talk about some of the things you all have been writing about at Chicago Inno, including a startup to better transport organs. Wow, what a good idea, huh?
Yeah, this is a company called Organ X. It's led by a third-year student at the University of Chicago. The company just won $60,000 in first place at the university's College New Venture Challenge. This is its startup competition for undergrads, now in its 10th year here in Chicago. Organ X, really interesting business, right? So what they're doing is they're creating a device to transport organs that are used in transplants. You know, the founder told me he went on his first organ procurement run and during sort of the research phase of this business, and was sort of shocked to learn that the medical team was using what's essentially a picnic cooler to transport these organs. The problem with the traditional situation and the traditional devices, these regular picnic coolers, so to speak, is they actually get too cold, and they are not, you know, very good at regulating the temperature for organs. And so what Organ X's device is looking to do is to keep the temperature at the right amount and also control other things like temperature pressure. So they are working through the FDA process right now. They have a working prototype, and certainly the $60,000 investment from UChicago is a step in the right direction.
How does that not already exist? That's amazing, isn't it?
You know, there are a couple of companies that are doing this right now, but really they're kind of, you know, what the founder told me, really just two main players. So they think that there is a big opportunity to be another player in this space and to help medical teams with the transport here. So, it's a bit of a nascent industry, actually, and they think there's a lot of room for growth.
I'm always fascinated by any Winklevoss news, and you have some, so lay it on us.
Yeah, so we scooped this story last week. The Winklevoss twins, their company Gemini, which is a New York-based cryptocurrency exchange, they've signed a long-term lease here in Chicago at 1 South Wacker in the Loop. They've leased about 17,000 square feet, plan to fully move in by August and hire about 100 more folks here in Chicago. They first came here back in 2019, working out of a small co-working space. So it was definitely big news then, and certainly it shows that over the last few years, they've really taken to Chicago and tapped into the city's growing cryptocurrency talent. The space for Gemini really kind of comes as there's quite a bit of crypto momentum in Chicago. CoinFlip, a Bitcoin ATM operator, announced last year plans to move into the old post office, taking over 40,000 square feet there. And FTX, which we've talked about not too long ago, also a crypto exchange, their U.S. headquarters is actually here in Chicago. They have an office in the West Loop, and of course, they ran a Super Bowl commercial this year with Larry David, and they've got plans to hire about 80 to 100 over the next couple of years. So definitely some interesting momentum on the crypto side of things here in Chicago as the Winklevoss twins continue to double down on Chicago.
In that story, you had a couple of paragraphs about Jump Capital. Can you just give me a minute on that? What's Jump Capital?
Yeah, Jump Capital, the VC firm from Jump Trading. And last year, you know, they launched a new blockchain-focused division called Jump Crypto. You know, they raised a new fund recently and, you know, have really doubled down on crypto investing. So Jump Capital is a big-time startup investor and, you know, does a lot of fintech investing and has really kind of carved out a piece for cryptocurrency specifically. And so, you know, Chicago obviously has a storied history in financial trading. And what we're kind of seeing now is a lot of folks sort of pivot from the industry to cryptocurrency. And what that's created is a bit of an ecosystem in Chicago where there's a lot of talent around cryptocurrency trading and technology.
Let's also talk about a story you wrote about. We were actually talking the other day about how complicated it can be when you go out to dinner as a group. Somebody eats a lot, somebody doesn't eat as much, somebody drinks a lot, somebody doesn't drink at all. This is a conundrum for our Bob Surratt. There is, an app that's sort of anticipating these problems?
Yeah, that's right. So that app is called Cravosity, and it's launched by a Chicago founder here, who's actually a Google employee and Northwestern MBA grad. And what she's doing with Cravosity is really interesting, just what you said. She's kind of simplifying the process for planning group dinners. It lets you create a group within the app and invite your friends who can kind of create their own profiles with their dietary needs and their budget and the type of food they want, whether they want to sit inside or outside, any kind of other details. And it sort of really simplifies creating a group dinner experience. It basically will, based on its algorithm, match you with a restaurant that matches with all the preferences of everybody. and also connect to your work calendar and your personal calendar and set up a time that works for everybody as well. So it's really kind of a really easy way to kind of take away that sort of complicated, messy group text message thread where it gets kind of a little unruly. So, you know, it might not seem that hard to plan a group dinner, but there's also a B2B component here, which I think is really interesting, sort of helping companies plan work dinners, which is, I think, especially challenging when you have new employees joining the team and you don't know everybody's food preferences.
Do I understand correctly then? So say you got it, because at the end of the day, somebody's going to be happy, somebody's not, you know. But it sounds like it takes all this information about price. I want to eat inside, you want to eat outside, you like fish, I like steak. And then it takes all that, and then it says, based on everybody's input, here's what we recommend are a couple of restaurants that would satisfy the most people for the most part. Is that kind of what this thing does?
That's exactly right. And, you know, the next steps of it, too, I think are really interesting because they're eyeing, you know, bill splitting, for example. Yeah. So that's a feature they could bring to the app as well. And not just simply cutting it in eight equal ways, but, you know, based on the types of food somebody orders. So, you know, if you're not drinking, you're going to be paying less than somebody who is drinking. For example, if you're a vegetarian, you're likely going to be paying less as well. So that's a piece of the app they could develop down the road.
We're out of time, aren't we? It's 12:44. These are all interesting stories, and there's still more good reading. ChicagoWinnow.com. It's always a pleasure to visit with you, Jim Dahlke. Thank you for your time. Let's visit again.
Thanks, John.
He's a senior editor over there. Steve Grzanich is in the newsroom here.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Chicago-based Nielsen Holdings, the audience measurement company, has rejected a buyout offer from a private equity group, saying it significantly undervalued the company. Bloomberg reports the proposal valued Nielsen at $24.50 a share. A statement from the company says that price wouldn't adequately compensate shareholders for Nielsen's growth prospects. Brookfield Asset Management has been working with Elliott Investment Management on the potential leveraged buyout of Nielsen. Shares of Boeing started the day nearly 8% lower after one of its planes crashed in China. The 737-800 went down in southwestern China. 132 people were on board the aircraft, which went down in a mountainous area. China Eastern says it's grounding all of its Boeing 737-800 jets as a result. Radar tracking shows the plane descended steeply on an almost vertical trajectory. The Boeing model that crashed is considered one of the safest aircraft ever made. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Business of Food Time. Here's Steve Alexander.
Yeah, National Agriculture Week this week, Johnny. Tomorrow is National Agriculture Day with big doings going on in Washington, D.C., and I've got exciting news. Our old pal Max Armstrong is there, and he'll be joining us at this time tomorrow to tell us what's all going on. The stories coming out of Ukraine are mostly devastating, but amid all the sadness we have been seeing, well, the little victories of farmers with their John Deere tractors being shown on social media in photos and videos, towing Russian tanks and rocket launchers and other military hardware down the road. Well, here in America, there's great competition between green tractor fans and red tractor fans. And the red tractor fans will be happy to hear that Case IH is now involved in that tank stealing action. A photo posted on Twitter over the weekend showing a big red tractor towing a Russian tank away somewhere in the northeast of Ukraine. The ag world, meanwhile, is watching and waiting and hoping that Ukrainian farmers will be able to use their tractors, of every color, to get crops planted in the coming months. Commodity traders are keeping an eye on whether Russia's attacks will get in the way of planting. Ukraine is a big exporter of corn and wheat, and Russia is a major exporter of wheat, of course. We have been able to keep track of how things are going in the war by the trading of commodities. When things are looking grim for peace or a ceasefire, as has mostly been the case, crude oil and wheat have been surging, and that's the case today. Crude oil is up about over 5% at $110 a barrel. And at the Chicago Board of Trade, we've had wheat as high as 85 cents, the limit, daily limit. Right now it's up 73 cents, just over 6.5% higher at 11.36. Corn and soybeans are tagging along. Corn right now is up about 18 cents. Soybeans are trading 27 cents higher. More tractor news. The men and women who grow our food have been watching the right to repair issue. which boils down to whether the owner of a tractor or combine or whatever should have the right to work on their own machines without voiding the warranties. John Deere this morning announced that beginning in May, customers and independent repair shops will be able to purchase a repair program that can be downloaded and they can do it themselves. From the farm to your belly, today's National French Bread Day, and it's National California Strawberry Day. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Here's Amy Guth talking to us about, well, where do we start today, Amy? You've got something to say about that airline story, I guess, huh?
Certainly. You know, that's a Boeing aircraft that crashed in China earlier. So, of course, I'm keeping a close eye on that. 132 people on board, 9 crew members. The FAA has said that they are standing by, ready to be involved if asked to do so by Chinese aviation authorities. You know, what I think is really notable about this crash in particular is China was one of the first markets to ground the 737 MAX almost 3 years ago and was one of the last to bring that plane back. Now, this is a different plane. This is the 737-800NG, which was the precursor to the 737 MAX. But some of the reports of exactly how this crashed, these are early reports, all pending investigation, but some of them are striking kind of an eerie similarity to that kind of nose down sort of quickly dropping in altitude sort of thing. So I know there'll be a lot more news about this to come, certainly. But, you know, it's interesting timing for Boeing, who has really been working hard to get that plane, to get their 737 MAX back flying in Chinese skies. So this plane, the 737-800, the one that crashed, all models of that, there's about 102 or so with this particular airline. They are all grounded for now.
I think Steve said earlier that Boeing is off 4% today. I think that was the number.
Yeah.
4% as a result of that single incident. And maybe it doesn't matter if it was something that transpired with the people or a pilot error or something, or if it was a mechanical failure, either way the plane goes down. Huh?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's what we see so often when in stock market reactions, it's kind of the details almost don't matter at first. People are just kind of reacting to the what ifs and the maybes and the possibilities.
Blue Cross Blue Shield's in the news. What's the story there today?
Yeah, certainly. So their parent company, Healthcare Services Corporation, is cutting down their footprint in Downers Grove. They said they are embracing a hybrid work model. So they're relinquishing about 25% or so of their space. They're still going to be in Downers Grove. They've been, you know, right in that area, but they're moving to 3500 Lacey Road. So they'll have about 133,000 square feet there, moving into that space. But I think it's very interesting. They're moving into this kind of thing a lot of people are calling hoteling, which is like office space that's a little more flexible, where people are working remotely. They might come in for a meeting, or they might come in for some, a brainstorm, something like that, or to meet a client. But for the most part, people are a little more scattered in terms of where they're doing their work from.
Let's just mention, too, Jergens Lotion has recalled what?
Yes, they have issued a recall for their Ultra Healing brand of lotion. So the best thing to do is head to the Food and Drug Administration. They have a whole thing of recalls, and you can check the serial number of yours. But this is the Ultra Healing version. It's kind of that yellow print on the thing. It was made between October 1st and October 18th of last year. It is being recalled because of a bacteria that's in it. The FDA noted that this really poses very little medical risk to healthy people, but for immune compromised people, which make up about 7 million adults in the U.S., this could cause an infection. So they're asking people as a precautionary measure to discontinue use of that lotion. If you have that lotion, you can call an 800 number, and that's also linked from the FDA website, as well as Kao, K-A-O USA, which is the parent company of Jergens. You can enter the serial number, and they'll send you a prepaid envelope and plastic bag, and they'll send you a free replacement coupon.
Amy Guth joins us twice a week. We'll talk to you later this week. Thanks, Amy.
Thanks so much, John.